Yeah, not today, it's not. I mean, I am Jim Rome still, but it's not the Jim Rome Show, not today. Look at Rit on the other side of the glass. Another wardrobe change. Now he's in a Walter Payton gamer. Coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you want to buy a home or refinance your current home, Rocket can. Rit gets his moment again in 20 minutes. All right, so a busy, busy, busy second hour. 1-800-636-8686. First order of business, however, we are joined right now by the U.S. Men's National Team head coach. He was named head coach in December of 2018. U.S. defeated Costa Rica last night 2-1 in Columbus. Currently second place, World Cup qualifying standings. He is a good friend of the program. Next match is against Mexico, November 12th in Cincinnati, of course. I'm speaking of Greg Berhalter. Greg, it's good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How you doing?
Good, dude. Good. Let's talk a little mindset really quickly, Greg. So,
you know it.
Yeah, take me back. Before last night's match, you were coming off that tough result in Panama. You had a quick turnaround, and then you had to play Costa Rica. What was your message to the team after the loss on Sunday, and then how'd you go about getting them ready for last night?
You know, it was a challenge to the team to respond. We coming into the window, it was always a one-game-at-a-time mentality. So how quickly do you push Panama out of the way and then refocus on Costa Rica? And, you know, to double down on that, you know, we gave up a goal in the first minute of the game, and now it's about, okay, how do we respond from not only a poor performance in Panama, but going down in the game really early against Costa Rica? And the guys did a fabulous job of staying poised and just focusing on the game plan.
Greg Berhalter is my guest. Of course, I was going there next. You did fall behind 1-0 in the first minute. When that happened, what went through your head? What were you thinking?
Just really trying to assess the next couple of minutes and see how what the body language was like, what the movement was like, how they're executing the game plan. You know, and I turned to the assistant coaches about 15 minutes in the game. I said, "We're fine. We got this because we're really playing well." And you know, even being down, we're confident we're going to get back into it.
Talking to Greg Berhalter, you know, you and I have talked about this in the past, that you've got a really young team, but you've talked about the resilience of the pool of players in the past. I know you're never looking to start a match like that, but what did you make of the way they kept their heads and the way they responded to taking that punch early on, especially given their youth?
You know, it was impressive. It was impressive that they just, you know, that the group just stuck to the plan and kept going and wasn't fazed by it. You know, maybe it was the consequence of giving up a goal so early that you know there's a lot of time to go. You know, maybe it's the fact that we've been through that before. You know, the Gold Cup final, the Nations League final, we gave up a goal in the first 2 minutes. But, you know, I can't speak highly enough about this group and how, you know, the qualifying is an absolute grind. Every game is a final. And these guys have been rolling with it and just battling through it, and it's been fun to see so far.
We're talking to Greg Berhalter. It's fun to talk about. Let me ask you about the 25th minute. Sergiño Dest had an absolute rocket of a goal from the edge of the box with his left foot. You've been around the sport a long, long time. You know what kind of talent he has. How special was that particular goal?
You know, we had a great vantage point. We were right behind him as he's shooting, and you just see it. And the goalie of Costa Rica is one of the best goalkeepers in the world. So when you hit a shot like that, you know, you're just hoping he doesn't pull out some magic and save it. But Sergiño is a top talent. I challenged him before this camp to be more offensive and really try to make an impact on the offensive end. And he had an assist and a goal in these three games. So, you know, really proud of his effort.
All right, so you've said it yourself, Greg, that this guy can be as good as he wants to be. When you see a goal like that, especially considering his shoe was untied, and then you see a performance like that. I mean, how good can he be, and does he know how good he can be?
You know, I think he's starting to learn that. Again, we're talking about a very young player who has a lot of experience at a high level, but still needs to understand that he can take it to an even a greater level, and he can be one of the best in the world. But for him, it's about just understanding that, embracing that, and then going after, attacking.
Let me ask you this. Like, it'd be easy to focus on that goal in the finish, but the build-up to that goal included 13 passes among 9 players over more than 30 seconds. How much pride is there for you, not just in that goal, but in the build-up to that goal?
It was a good game, a good performance, and it's really, when we're at our best, Jim, it's collective, and that goal typifies it. It was a great finish, but when you see the ball circulation, the movement by the guys, that's when we're playing our best soccer.
Talking to Greg Berhalter, talking about last night's win. All right, so overall, you were able to dominate possession, and then, Greg, in the 66th minute, Timothy Weah's ball found the back of the net. What did you make of that moment?
Serginho had another great pass behind the back line. We wanted to threaten their back line. We wanted to put them under pressure. We knew they had they had to take their goalkeeper off at halftime, so we knew that was going to be an advantage for us, and we wanted to put pressure on them. And you can't score if you don't shoot. And Timmy was in a great position, made a great run, and had a good finish and a near post goal. But just a great moment for me personally to be back in Columbus, where I was for 5 years in coaching and seeing all the fans, that came to the Crew games. It was a great moment, and collectively for the team, it was a great moment.
And then when we talk about the collectively great moment for the team, I keep going back, Greg, to the youth, but another way of looking at the youth on the field last night is the fact that your oldest starter was younger than Costa Rica's youngest starter. So obviously the three points, that's wild, right? Like the three points are the most important thing, but how important is it for your young players to get this kind of experience?
It's crucial. I mean, we're playing a different game right now. We're playing, we're freshmen playing against post grads. That's literally what it is. But the guys are fearless, and the guys just stay focused on the moment. They don't get ahead of themselves, and they don't let the past affect them too much. So, listen, next window will be the same type of roller coaster, and so will the window after that and the window after that. Hopefully when we come out of this battle, we're in the top three spots and we're qualified for the World Cup.
We're talking to Greg Berhalter. I want to ask you about another guy, Ricardo Pepi. Didn't score last night, and at this point, it almost feels like a shock, which is a crazy thing to say, right, about an 18-year-old with a handful of caps. But what is it about him that makes him so special and so unique?
He's a killer in the box. He's a pure finisher. I mean, he had a chance yesterday, this header that he tried early in the game. It's an instinctual type of play by him, and that's what he does. He anywhere around the goal, he smells blood and he goes for it. Really stays calm, is poised, really smart soccer player. He's another high-level player that we have.
All right, so when you talk about him and describe him that way, it kind of makes me think about you, and I want to ask you this. You took a lot of heat after the loss to Panama. Now, that goes with the job, but what's it like going from a 2-0 win over Jamaica when you're able to get some verticality, you got a good result despite playing without two of your best players, and then only a few days later, you have a tough result, and then suddenly everybody's outraged. How did you process that?
I ignore it, because that's not going to help us win against Costa Rica. And, after four games, we had the best start in the last 20 years of World Cup qualifying. And after the fifth game, we're the worst team in the world, and that's our business, unfortunately. But I also know that fans want to see us win. And I accept that. And Jim, we played like crap against Panama. We didn't play good. There should be responsibility for that. And I'm okay with it. That's the business. Ultimately we know what we're about internally, and that's what we continue to focus on.
See, I think that's exactly what that is, right? That is the business. There's some ownership in saying we didn't play well against Panama, but we're focused internally. And one more thing I would add to that, Greg, it was not that long ago that the U.S. could lose a qualifier, and not only was there not outrage, a lot of people wouldn't even notice or even care. So the fact that there is this kind of reaction and there is this kind of pressure, is it not a good thing? I mean, is this not a classic case of pressure feeling like a privilege?
I agree with that. I think that's right. And, the other thing I'd add is that, there's fear. There's fear in people's heads that we're not going to qualify because we didn't last time. And that residual effect of not qualifying is still hanging over the program. And we have to accept that. We have to take ownership of that.
Greg Berhalter, my guest for another moment or so. So you wrap up three qualifiers in less than a week. Now you've got some time before your next match, which is against Mexico on November 12th. How do you approach the next few weeks, and what are your early thoughts on that match in Cincinnati?
So first couple of days I'm unwinding, spending time with family. And then, as we get into Monday of next week, now it's go time. We start focusing on Mexico, which is going to be, our premier home game that we have in the window and in the whole qualifying series. And then we go away to a scrappy Jamaica team that just got a victory and is clawing its way back into the picture. So, you know, we'll prepare. The first thing is to see where our guys are at, see who's healthy, and chart their progress over the next 3 weeks. And then get ready to play, get ready to attack these teams.
Hey, great. Lastly, you mentioned family. Since I kind of know the family a little bit, I'm really curious, like, what kind of an impact does it have on the family? I mean, are you still just dad and this is just dad doing work? Or are they kind of caught up in living and dying with each win and loss, although you're not doing that per se? You know what I'm getting at? Like, what's it done to your family dynamic?
You know, they're just 100% behind the team, and they put everything into each and every game, and they just love it. You know, Rosalind travels to as many games as she can, just in for the day. And then, you know, the family's watching. I mean, it's really special. You know, my extended family as well. Everyone's just so behind the whole thing.
That's great. And they're old enough to understand it and get the experience. Yeah. I think that's just awesome. So the next match is Mexico, November 12th in Cincinnati. He is the head coach of the U.S. men's national team, Greg Berhalter. Greg, I really appreciate you coming on after that. I'm glad you got that win. Congrats. Enjoy the time, and I'll be looking forward to the next time we talk and seeing the guys play.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
My man, Greg Berhalter, joining us on the program. Good as always. Good friend of the program. Currently second place in the World Cup qualifying standings. And again, had to have that last night. Had to have it. Fall behind early on and get it done. And I want to stress this again. He did take a lot of heat after Panama. But again, it was not that long ago that there was no heat because there were no expectations. And the bar has been raised. Speaking of the bar being raised, and certainly you can respond to anything you just heard, you know, if you want to hear quality, informed, intelligent talk about hockey, you come to this guy. If you want to hear quality, informed, intelligent talk about soccer, you come to the same guy. If you want to hear Greg Berhalter talk about his team and his mindset and his process and his approach, you come to this show. We know this. And if you want to hear Rit, you get ready. Dude, are you going to change again? Is there another wardrobe change before this? Apparently so. He's already run through the Bears, the Blackhawks, Cubs, and Charlotte. All in the first hour and 12 minutes. And now it's time. Let me set this up before we go to break. Because when we come out of the break, I am not going to intro him. He will be here doing what he does, dominating. Again, today is my birthday. More importantly, it is Garrett Ritt's birthday. Almost as importantly, it was Dwight Eisenhower's birthday. Most important of all, Ike and Dwight are doppelgangers. They look exactly alike. So in honor of that, I'm going to let Garrett Ritt host a segment on this show. That segment is next segment. He will be in the studio. I will be back on the other side of the glass. I have no idea what he's going to do. It's time. Finally. Garrett Ritt Show on the other side of this. I would say, I don't know for certain whether or not he's going to take phone calls, but go ahead and start dialing right now. I would imagine a lot of you want to talk to him, and you're going to have a tough time getting through. Start dialing right now, 1-800-636-8686. My only concern is we have a guest right after that, and I know Ritt. Ritt will either want to interview the guest himself or cancel the guest. One thing at a time, Pops. One thing at a time. Alvin, get me the hell out. The world belongs to Garrett Ritt. Next. All right, Clones, you know that I'm always looking out for you. So why don't we talk about the most creative sports betting app on the market anywhere? WynnBET. That's right, WynnBET. The luxury hoteliers are now in the digital sports betting space, and they are offering the same five-star service that you're used to from Wynn Resorts, all in the form of a sports book and casino app. So whether you're playing money lines and props for NFL Week 6 or totals and live betting for College Football Week 7, WynnBET is where you want to be. All the biggest events are right here at WynnBET. I love these guys. WynnBET is also a fully integrated program with Wynn Rewards. What that means is they have the finest loyalty program in the industry. See their site for all the details. So whether you're playing from your phone or your computer, you have got to sign up for WynnBET stat. Bet with the best. Get into the game right now. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at winbet.com. You do have to be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WinBet is available. If you or somebody you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show. Southern California, this is the Garrett Rich Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Oh, baby, talk to me, Jerry Rafferty in Baker Street. One of the best yacht rock songs there ever was. In fact, probably the best yacht rock song there ever was. I know we're not supposed to talk about the bump music that comes in, but I love me some Baker Street. It reminds me, actually, because we, little known fact, a little behind the scenes here, we all drive in to the studio every day on Baker Street. So I think in this song every time we come in. And it has the one rule that I always have for all yacht rock songs, and that is a sax solo. In fact, this thing has like four sax solos. That's what makes it the king, and I love it. Jerry Rafferty, thank you, my man, Baker Street. And with that, I welcome you to the second annual Garrett Ritt Show. My continuing slow-moving coup on the most iconic sports radio show in history.
Ionic.
The show it took Jim 30 years to build, the show that put him in the Hall of Fame, the show that put Tom Hanks in the ground, is now the show I have complete control over for the next 15 minutes, or 20, 25 minutes, whatever it takes. I say 15 minutes because I think you both know, or all of us know, that I really took control of this thing the day I walked into that door about 2.5 years ago. In fact, you know what? 15 minutes is not going to be nearly enough. Smackerman, Rich, you may have to sit this one out, my man, because I'm probably going to be going a little heavy in this bad boy. 15 minutes just isn't anywhere near enough for me to off any of the celebrities that you all had in your JTP death pool for me today. So I'm sorry to disappoint, but Forrest Gump's year-old carcass is just going to have to suffice. Because other than Hanks and obviously the career of Gary Sinise, everyone else in that movie is very much alive and well. So sorry, Lieutenant Dan, you miserable, legless D-bag, but you had it coming and we all know it.
Forrest, I never thanked you for saving my life.
All right, so we're off. We're off and running. So far, so good. And I think you're going to have to dig in a little for the rest of us, especially for a few minutes, because we have a very special guest coming up in a few minutes. So if you do nothing else, please, please stick it out until he or she gets here. I guarantee you it will be worth the wait. Or even, I guess, even the better scenario for all of you, that person doesn't show up, and I'm left here naked with about 10 minutes to fill, absolutely nothing to fill it with except stories of, I don't know, canceled Garth Brooks tickets before even get going on this beautiful buffet of sweets that I have laid out in front of me, as you all see. So, yeah, why don't we go to a call first? Why not? We have them lined up. I think we had someone on hold that wanted to talk to on the Garrett Rich Show. Why don't we bring him up? Who is it? Paul's dog. Yes. Paul, talk to me.
Hello, Ike. Good show, dude. Remember when you were president of the United States? Did you kill James Dean?
Rock him. He's out. Ruff. Nice, Paul Dog.
Rack
Thank you
him.
Very much. Thank you very, very much. Now, I'm looking at this buffet, and I'm just now, this is not cool. All right? I took a lot of time to take all this in here, and all of a sudden, I've got a freaking thing of jelly beans in front of me. Come on. I have the Swiss Miss, the Rolos, the caramel corn. I had the cheer wine. I didn't bring it out, but I'm going to. This is not cool. jelly beans suck. Jelly beans really, really suck. In fact, if you get nothing else out of this segment at all, if nothing else goes right for me the rest of this segment, just know, jelly beans suck. In fact, I may never have a better and more important take in the rest of my life. Jelly beans suck. In fact, they suck to the power of 1,000 sucks. So, in a word, F jelly beans, take all this for what it's worth. I think we have one more call here. Who are we going to go to this time? How about Susie in Wisco? I remember Susie in Wisco. I believe she was putting on the Rit about a year ago this time. Susie, welcome.
Hey, Rit. This is so awesome. Thanks for taking my call. You made it. A very happy birthday to you and Jim. And I wanted to personally wish you a Merry Ritmas and caution you not to eat too many ho-ho-hos so you don't get diabetes. I'd like you to be around for a real long time, possibly long enough for me to write a sequel anthem. So way to go, dude.
Thank you, Susie. Amazing. I love it. Thank you to Paul's dog. Thank you to Susie. But we do indeed have our special guest on the line. I got to tell you, I am super pumped for this, and I hope you guys will be too. We now welcome, he is currently the head of new media at the Peabody Conservatory at Johns Hopkins University. He is the author of Speed of Sound, writer and director of the award-winning film The Invisible Lighthouse. He wrote the song for and was the bartender in the film Howard the Duck. And I hope I don't insult him by saying this, but probably without question, the coolest thing about him is that his wife was actually in The Godfather Part 2, which is absolutely incredible. And oh yeah, he just happens to have 5 Grammy nominations. He played with David Bowie at Live Aid. The government and his mama know him as Thomas Morgan Robertson, but you know him because of this little number. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the jungle legend himself and fellow October 14th-er, the professor, Thomas Dolby. Professor, how the heck are you? Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
I'm great. It's good to be here. Happy birthday.
Oh, my God. Well, happy birthday to you, sir. And in fact, I'm sorry that I cut into your time. I know like in about 15 or 20 minutes, you're actually going to be teaching a class there at Johns Hopkins University. I got to ask, what exactly is today's lessons plan? If I was going to be there learning in class with you right now, what are you going to be teaching us all today?
Okay, so I teach film and game music at the Peabody Conservatory. So I'll be teaching my first year undergrads how to evoke fear with music.
Oh, I love it. I love it so much. Now, listen, you are a rock legend. You've been known to hang out with other rock legends, and I can't even imagine some of the parties you've probably been to in your day. What is the best birthday party you've ever had yourself? Have you had one? Have you had a big blowout at some point?
You know, I was never that into big blowouts particularly. I was always a slightly reluctant rock star.
Right.
And I'm kind of glad that I've sunk back into relative obscurity now. I like that sort of, rarefied, iconic legend status much better than I like being out and about being a celeb.
I feel you there. Well, a bit of a humble brag here, but for my birthday tonight, I'm actually going to see the Stones at SoFi Stadium here in Los Angeles. It's a big deal for me. I've never seen the Stones before. Now, I know you and Mick and Keith and Ronnie, you're all fellow Londoners. So I'm going to naturally assume you're all best friends. So are you actually doing anything for your birthday tonight? And have any of your previous birthdays involved any of the members of the Stones?
You know, I've never actually met the Stones. I'll tell you a funny story, though, about my wife, who, as you mentioned, was an actress who was in Godfather 2, among other things. A bunch of friends of mine were going to see the Stones in Oakland one night at some stadium or other, in a limo. And she said, "Why can't I go?" I said, "If you can name 3 Rolling Stones songs, I will take you along." And she didn't make it.
Couldn't pull it off.
So it tells you how interested she is in music. But no, I mean, I've had some incredible birthdays. But tonight, my dear wife is taking me to see the author David Sedaris in concert.
Sure.
Who's one of my favorite authors, and he's playing at the Symphony Hall here in Baltimore.
Genius. I love it. I love that you're also getting out. So, but I'm obviously mentioned, and you just talked about it, you are a professor these days at Johns Hopkins, but that doesn't mean you stopped touring, as far as I know. In fact, you were in L.A. as recently as 2018. You played with Blondie, Adam Ant, Soft Cell in Berlin here in L.A., which is just amazing. I can't believe I missed that. You were also scheduled for another tour just before COVID hit. What's the latest plan? Is there going? Are we going to be seeing you on stage anytime in the near future?
Yeah, I was really upset. You know, that I was due to play the Greek Theater last fall, and that would have been an amazing homecoming because, you know, I lived in L.A. for, I don't know, nearly 10 years at the end of the 80s. And up there in the Hollywood Hills, and my favorite gig of all time, I think, was the Greek Theater on a hot, languorous night. So it would have been lovely to have come back there, but unfortunately that one was canceled. I'll try again. You know, it's like these sort of rewind retro type concerts can be fun. They can be kind of naff, but the overall vibe is great. Everybody's taking a trip down memory lane. And the nice thing is that if I can play to thousands of people with the likes of Blondie and Adam, then a few more hundred might come and see my own personal gigs, you know, when I'm playing at the Larsa Club.
Oh, man, I love it. The Greek Theater is the best, too. I've seen so many concerts out there. But
indeed.
All right. It's time to get serious now. Enough with the niceties, because this show, as we just found out last segment with Greg Berhalter of the U.S. Men's National Team, we are the official home of the English Premier League in the States. Everyone knows this, though I'm sure it comes as no surprise to our listeners that you are a hardcore 50-year fan of the Hammers of West Ham.
West Ham United.
That's it. I, of course, have adopted Everton, and I'm wearing the kit right now. I did that as my club of choice just over a decade ago when the U.S. had both Tim Howard and Landon Donovan on the same team. We just so happen to be hosting West Ham on Saturday, so I got to ask you, Everton 4-0 or Everton 5-0? Go.
You know, it could be very even. I think both teams are really on the up at the moment. You know, you guys have got a cool new manager, even though he's a bit of a traitor to your noisy neighbors.
Former Liverpool, yeah.
And West Ham are actually playing great. You know, it's really a challenge being a West Ham fan, I've got to tell you. You know, it's a lot easier supporting Man U or Chelsea or somebody. But it's really, you know, you go through hell as a West Ham fan most seasons. But right now we're doing great. You know, with your former manager, David Moyes, at the helm, and we've got a great team. So I think it should be a very interesting game this weekend.
Yeah, Antonio is one of my favorite players in the league. He's so underrated, so fast, so powerful. And
he's such a sweetheart. It's like he gives the best interviews. He's like the most honest and open guy you can imagine. He just loves the game.
So Rolling Stone once broke down all the fan bases in the EPL. And for my Toffees, strangely enough, they said, if you're American, you'll love Everton. So they obviously nailed that. But for West Ham, they described followers like yourself as, quote, masochists. Does that pretty much sum up the West Ham fandom experience?
Well, I think it does, you know. But it's like we have no choice. I've been supporting them since I was 8 years old. You know, same as you were into Everton when, you know, Landon Donovan and Tim Howard were playing there. In 1966, three of the World Cup-winning English team were West Ham players, Jeff Hurst, Martin Peters, and Bobby Moore. So that was when my eight-year-old self fell in love with West Ham. And since then, I've really had no choice in the matter. I just have to support them through rain and shine.
Indeed you do. Well, I wish I could wish you luck on Saturday, but I just can't do it. I got to keep with my Toffees. Thomas, thank you so much. This was amazing. I'm glad you could spare a few minutes of your time. I know you've got a lot of things going on, but sparing us on the Jim Rome Show and the Garrett Rich Show today was a real honor, and it was a real pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, and say hi to all of my friends in the LA area.
Done. It just happened. Thanks, Thomas. How good was that, everybody? My present to you, Thomas Dolby. Some other songs, you may not just know them from Blind Me With Science yet. Hyperactive, One of Our Submarines, Europa, and the Pirate Twins. All of them actually made the top 40 in the United States. One hit wonder, my butt. So, Thomas was the man. So, thank you so much for everyone. Jim, I want to say thank you for having me in. Craig Kitchen, thank you for having me in. All you listeners for calling in and wanting to be on the show. And also, a special shout out to my old man. He's actually, strangely enough, he's under the knife as we speak. He's having a heart procedure, and I'm really hoping for it and wishing for it, big guy. So good luck. Thank you again. Rich Ackerman, the CBS Sports Update. Rich, take it away.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Here we are. Here the bleep we are.
Here we are.
My next guest is set. I want to take 5 seconds and react very quickly to what I just heard. Rit, old man, you nailed it. I'm very happy with how that went. And I was not happy in the beginning. Not when you rolled out with Jerry Rafferty and Baker Street. Man, I hate that song. He's going all yacht rock up in here. Then he gives up our address. I'm like, holy crap, Rit. You want to give him my social security number too? But damn, man, dude just flattened out and just crushed it. Thomas Dolby. How about the Q&A with Dolby? All class. All right, so I've got more reaction. I know you all have reaction. We'll get to it a little bit later on. As promised, though, right now we're joined by a reporter and a storyteller for NFL Media. He is a Hall of Fame voter. He is the author of Junior Seau, The Life and Death of a Football Icon. He's a Peloton legend, as you know, an adjunct professor at San Diego State. He is Jim Trotter. Jim, good morning. What's up? How are you?
Romy, what's going on, man?
Good to talk to you, Jim. I wish we had better subject matter, but actually it's very important subject matter, so let's just jump right into it. Jim, Friday, there was a Wall Street Journal report on the email from John Gruden regarding DeMaurice Smith. What was your reaction to that email when you first saw it?
I really didn't have much, Romy. It was more of, is anyone surprised by this? You know, because what surprised me more than anything is people acting like this was something unusual or this might be a one-off in the NFL. And the reality is, John Gruden and Bruce Allen are not the only ones who speak this way in the NFL. All this was the curtain being pulled back and things that are said in the dark coming to light. That's all. So initially I wasn't worked up about it because, as I've said before, you know, I know of owners who have said things that are much worse, but it's not known publicly or it hasn't been printed publicly what they have said, and therefore they get away with it or it's covered up by the league. So none of this shocked me or surprised me.
Jim Trotter is joining us. Jim, I agree with you. My first thought when I saw that was, I'm not shocked by this, and believe this, this is not the only person in that league who's saying something like this. I mean, safe to assume that's the case. If they're not Gruden and Allen, if they're not the only ones in positions of authority, they're having conversations like that, Jim, what do you think that would say to Eric Bieniemy or Todd Bowles or Byron Leftwich, and whether or not they're going to get a fair shot as a head coaching candidate? What must they think when they see this?
That they're not going to get a fair shot. Look, Romy, what this said to me after you know, learning of what Gruden said of DeMaurice Smith, to me it was just another reflection that at the highest levels of the NFL, there is this passive-aggressive behavior towards black people. And what do I mean by that? I mean that when you look at the NFL as a whole, not just on the field, but the league office at NFL Media, blacks are not represented to the point that they should be. At the league office, we've got, 11 executive vice presidents, I was told. Only two of them are black. If you look at NFL Media, where we cover a player population that's 70% black, there is not one black person who's at the decision-making table when determining how we are going to cover these men. You go to the field, you and I both know the numbers in terms of head coaches and general managers is appalling. You go to the front office, there's only been one black club president in the history of the NFL, and that occurred, last year after this Washington football team investigation. So from my standpoint, there is this passive-aggressive behavior within the league that says to black people, you can entertain us, you can work for us, you can play for us, but when it comes to you actually having some authority and some decision-making power within this league, you're not going to have it. And so if I'm Eric Bieniemy and I'm Byron Leftwich and others, the next time the league trots out this statement that, well, the reason there's a lack of diversity among head coaches and GMs is because the pipeline is lacking, I'm going to look at you and say, tell me again what John Gruden said to Bruce Allen. And again, that's not speaking to someone who's just a bar buddy someplace. That is a person who is a president or was a president of a club. And as you know, the club president is one step below the owner. Bruce Allen has the authority, had the authority to hire and fire at the highest levels of the organization. And so when you know that he is engaged in that kind of conversation, then you know that blacks do not have a fair opportunity in this league at large.
We are talking to Jim Trotter. So, Jim, to that point, and as you have said, something needs to be done, and that something is not another slogan or a hashtag. What does need to take place in order to increase diversity in team leadership so that some of these conversations do fundamentally change?
You know, I'll say this first, Romy. I always find it interesting that blacks are asked to fix a problem that they didn't create. So from that standpoint, you know, it shouldn't be on me or any other black to tell the NFL what you need to do to correct a problem that you created. Having said that, my suggestion would be, first and foremost, to start to get some diversity and representation at the top of the organizations and the top of the league office. You know, have people of color sitting down at that table when some of these discussions and these decisions are being made. And if you're not going to do that, then there's really nothing else to talk about, because your actions will speak louder than your words. And that's why I have said, I'm done with hashtags. I'm done with slogans. I'm done with the black national anthem being played before games. I'm done with money being contributed to social justice causes. I want to see real change at the top. And at the top, it means having a diverse group of people who are having discussions about how to deal with these issues. And we don't have that in the NFL.
We are talking to Jim Trotter. So, Jim, there are 650,000 emails that are part of the investigation into the Washington football team. To the best of anybody's knowledge, the Gruden email on Friday was the first one to leak. Why has more of that investigation not come to light? In other words, why is John Gruden the only person to lose his job as a result of this investigation?
It's really stunning, Romy, to be frank with you. As I've said, I'm asking the question, what does an owner have to do to be kicked out of the league? I mean, Daniel Snyder had over 40 sexual harassment claims against his organization. We now know that his club president was engaged in racist, homophobic, and misogynistic conversations with someone. So if I, as an owner, oversee that sort of culture within my organization, I'm thinking that's something the NFL does not want. But all that's happened to this point is that Daniel Snyder got a $10 million fine, which to you and me may sound big, but to him is nothing, and was told he has to cede day-to-day control of his team indefinitely. To whom? To his wife, who he is with every day. So are we naive enough to believe that he is not having some conversation with his wife about what should be done with this team? So I ask the question again, what does an owner have to do to be bounced out of the league? And it's funny, you know, my former colleague Jamel Hill, who I respect tremendously, she tweeted out he has to kneel. And that's probably the only way that one of these owners would be kicked out of the league. We know Jerry Richardson was run out of here, but my understanding is that he had planned to get out even before he was accused of the claims that were made against him and his organization. So from my standpoint again, Romy, it mystifies me, and I believe that the reason that the NFL is not going to make these other emails transparent is because there's a lot more in there that's probably very damning, and it shows the tentacles of this thing, and particularly the tentacles of racism that exist in the NFL, and they don't want us to know about it. If we know one thing about the NFL, its mantra is protect the shield. So during the original Spygate case, when the Patriots were found to be guilty of videotaping opponents' signals and practice, whatever it was, what did they do? They destroyed the evidence so that we could never see the extent of what was going on. Now fast forward to the Washington football team investigation. What did they do? They asked for an investigation and said, oh, by the way, we don't want a written report on it. Why is that? Well, they say it's to protect the people who had made claims against the team, which I find to be laughable from this standpoint. Whenever you have a legal case, let's say a rape case, what do? They redact the name of the person making the claim, or they identify the person as, let's say, Jane Doe 1 or Jane Doe 2. You could have done the same thing with this Washington football team investigation. So I don't buy that they did not ask for a written report because they wanted to protect the victims. I believe it's because they don't want us to know the extent of what was really going on.
Jim Trotter, my guest. I think all of that's fair, Jim. So having said all of that, and that they're always going to fall back to protect the shield, do you have any sense then how that first email came out?
None. And it would be unfair of me to speculate, so I won't. I just find it very curious, as you do, that it was leaked about one specific individual. And let me say this too, Romy. I'm fascinated, mystified, whatever word you want to use, that Bruce Allen walks away from this without any sort of consequence. You know, he was fired or let go, whatever term you want to use, prior to the investigation starting. And he's not feeling any pain from this, even though he was intimately involved in it. Again, it's John Gruden who's the only one who has really felt the pain or consequence of what went on, and he wasn't even involved with what went on with the Washington football team. And I'm not saying I feel sorry for John Gruden. I'm just saying it's really curious that he's the only one who has taken shrapnel from this.
Extremely curious. Extremely curious. Jim Trotter, my guest. All right, Jim, before I let you go, and I appreciate your thoughts on that topic, completely different note, though. I did see you tweet earlier in the week that you were looking for a ticket to Game 5 tonight in San Francisco. Did you have any luck?
I did, but Romy, the thing I forgot is I had promised my daughter I would take her to the airport at 4:30 on Friday morning, and therefore there's no way I can get back from San Francisco in time to keep my promise. So even though I had a friend reach out to me and say they had a ticket, I had to pass up on it, and I will be watching on television tonight just like so many others.
Family first. Family first,
absolutely.
And that's going to be a great Game 5. He is a reporter and a storyteller for NFL Media. He is a Hall of Fame voter. Again, the author of Junior Seau, The Life and Death of a Football Icon. My guy, Jim Trotter. Jim, I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Great job as always, and always good to have you on the program.
Appreciate you, Romy.
You too, Jim. Appreciate you very much. Jim Trotter. There's some definite food for thought there. All right, so if you want to react to it, I would encourage you to do so. I will tell you at the top of hour number three, which is coming up in about 10 minutes, I've got the head football coach for UTSA, Texas, San Antonio. I want to get some reaction into Garrett Ritt, who had himself a day, had himself a segment. And I got to tell you, I'm not going to tell you what to say. I'm not going to tell you what to think. I think some of you are way out of line. I thought Ritt did great. Now, I was concerned again how he started when he busted out with Yacht Rock. Now, it is his show. His music sucks, but it is his show. I thought, oh, dude, you are not coming into Jerry Rafferty in Baker Street. Man, I hate that song so much. And I know, hate's a strong word. But I really do hate that song. And then when he said the reason for it is, well, you know, like, we all work on Baker Street. Great, right? Why don't you give him the code for the door to get in here? Give him the lock code while you're at it. But then, dude, rallied, man. He was smooth. He was confident without being arrogant. Now I know why you can't book the podcast. You probably spent all that time trying to get the professor on. But he did. Dolby was all class. You saw the Ritt lifestyle right here on the desk, all the candy he laid out. I thought he crushed it, man. I thought he did great. Your thoughts when we come back.